But if you jump into source number one, they said if Reich, he's quoting Tosfos in a Gemara that we'll look at in a little while. He says, Kasva Tosfos Perek Beis Detainios, Ahadam Rinan Biyotin Lebeis Akvaros Biyom Tainis Tzibur. They says the Gemara tells us that there was a practice to visit the cemetery on a public draft day. And Tosfos added, Mikan Noakim Bechom Akam Lelef Lebeis Akvaros Bitishaba. Sharei Tishaba Hadei Tainis Tzibur. And as an outgrowth of that practice to visit cemeteries on fast days, people would visit the cemetery on Tisha B'Av. Right? As an aside, the Rav Soloveitchik used to talk about this often, that there are two elements to Tisha B'Av, and they coalesce. So Tisha B'Av is a day of mourning. And we sit on the floor, and we're not wearing our regular shoes, and so on. But the mourner doesn't fast. There's a second element to Tisha B'Av, which is that it's also a Yom Tainis. It's also a day of tzaka and of fasting. And those two elements come together. We shouldn't forget that Tisha B'Av is also in the category of fast days. And on fast days, one visits the cemetery. So right off the bat, there's a minhag that goes all the way back to Tosfos to visit cemeteries on Tisha B'Av. All of this, we have the sheets in source number two. This might be the earliest person in our tradition to visit a cemetery. Who is it? Kalev. Okay, so you remember the story of the spies. The Torah tells us right toward the beginning of their mission, Vayalu banega vayavo ad Chevron. But the Gemara right away notices that there's a problem with that formulation. What's the problem? Vayavo mi bayalev. So there's a group of them. There's 12 of them. It's in plural. Vayalu banegev. They, the whole troop of Meraglim, they went up through the south. Vayavo ar Chevron. That's in the singular. And he came up to Chevron. So the Gemara says, Amarav milamish shepiresh kalev mi atzas Meraglim. Okay, so Rashi made this famous. So this is the Gemara telling us in the name of Rava that Kalev took a detour. He didn't follow the path of the other 11 spies. He went off on his own to, where did he go? V'halach v'nishateach al kivrei avos. He went to Hebron. He went, when we were kids, we learned this Rashi, we usually translated as he went to Davin at kivrei avos. He went to Davin at Hebron. What does v'nishateach actually mean? The prostrate. Thank you, Yair. More than one person is admitted to participate. It's very graphic. Right? So he's not just standing there with a tehillim, right? He's prostrate on the grave, right, of the avos. Venishtateach al kibre avos. Amar lehen, and he says, avosai. Okay, and we have to come back to this, but he says, my parent, you know, avosai, babi zaidi. Okay, Davin on my behalf that I should be saved from the wicked counsel of the spies. As an aside, right, this Gemara is arguing that the spies had made up their mind before the mission. Put that aside for another time. Right away, you see that there's a very early tradition of someone going to visit the graves of our forefathers. The Gemara goes one step further. Okay, in the source that we just saw, source number two, there's an ellipsis. What do I mean? There's an ellipsis. Kalev prays for a good outcome, and he ends up with a good outcome. But we have to connect the dots. The Gemara never explicitly says that his success was a result of his prayer. But listen to the next source, source number three. Gemara and Tainus tells us, the two, Rabbi Mani Berei, there was a man called Rebbe Mani, who was the son of a man called Rebbe Yonah. And he was being persecuted for reasons that are not known to us by the house of the Nasi. What did he do? Ishtatach al kivrei d'avuham. It's the same root, by the way. So we would translate it. He davened at the kivrei avos. No, he actually went to his father's grave and he prostrated himself. Amar lein, he said, Abba, Abba. He starts talking to his father, who is dead and buried. Ani mitzarule, these guys are bothering me. They're persecuting me. Yomachada Havukachal Fehas. One day, the people who were persecuting him happened to be passing by the cemetery, the grave. Inkut Kara Desusa Busaihu. They were on some horses in a carriage, and the horses got stuck in the mud at the cemetery. They realized that it was not a coincidence, and they decided, okay, we're going to stop bothering this man, Rebbe Mun. So he goes to his father's grave, he prays there, and the Gemara tells us the prayer works. The people who were persecuting this Rebbe Mun, he stopped persecuting him. So we have a number of biblical and Talmudic precedents for this notion of davening at Kivrei Avos, on the one hand. Yeah, Robert. Oh, no, no, it does. I just mean, he's, I don't know how many generations separating him from Abraham and Sarah and, the Avos that are buried there. So yes, presumably he's davening to the Avos who are buried in Chevron. Okay, so on the one hand, we have these precedents that, it's not just good to daven at Kivrei Avos, but it's actually efficacious. Now, on the other hand, I want to share another perspective, which you can already begin to see in source number four, Tan Rabbanan Ezu Shote. It's a big conversation and an important topic in halacha and beyond. People suffer from mental illness. You have to know where we draw the line. There's a spectrum. Somebody could be in one place in the spectrum. Somebody could be in a totally different place in the spectrum. At what point do we say someone is non-compos mentis, such that they're not obligated in mitzvahs? So is there an objective standard by which you could measure and say this person is not chayav mitzvos? We would designate them halachically in the category of a shote. The Gemara has three answers. Who's a shote? Eze who shote? Yotze chidi balayla. We don't have this anymore, but there was a time for practical and Kabbalistic reasons that it was considered to be crazy to walk alone at night. So if someone walked alone at night, that would render them a shote. For our purposes, the next category, Va'alan bebeis akvaro, someone who sleeps in a cemetery, okay, Va'amakare eskusan, someone who rips their clothing. So again, I know it's hard to think about it objectively because we have all these associations with cemeteries, but if you just follow the logic, someone would say, cemetery is a holy place, like a Beis Medrash, a holy place, a good place for tefillah, so maybe I should spend more time there, maybe I should sleep there. So right away, you should just notice the Gemara is saying, no, we're not saying that. Someone who sleeps in a cemetery is considered to be a shote. And source number five, the Gemara tells us, actually a Mishnah rather, Marchikines anavelus vesa kvaros vesa borski mina ir chamishim ama. Where do you put the cemetery? You're doing some urban planning. Don't put the cemetery in the city. Make sure it's at least 50 amos outside the city. So cemeteries, for one reason or another, are something that we keep at a distance. And now, source number six, which again is its own topic, and I'm just going to look at it quickly with you, but we don't do mitzvos in a cemetery, and the Shulchan Aruch sort of summarizes this set of halachos in source number six. What mitzvos are we not performing in the cemetery, and why? So join me, source six, Lo yahalach b'nei zakvaros o b'sof dalet amos shomeis v'tzfilin b'rosho mishum loeg l'rosh. So first of all, you can't go to a cemetery or come within Dalet Amos of a grave wearing tefillin. Why can't you wear tefillin at the cemetery? Because it's loeg l'rosh. So again, it's not our topic this morning, but this is a big category called loeg l'rosh, which means that you're teasing, that you're mocking them. Right? Here I am wearing my tefillin, I'm doing this mitzvah. They don't have a goof anymore. They've left this world. They can't be performing that mitzvah. That's a violation of loeg l'rosh. You can't go to a cemetery with tefillin. Shulchan Aruch continues. Lo yahalach b'nei zakvaros o b'sof dalet amos o shel kever v'sefer Torah bizroa v'yikareba. You can't take a sefer Torah to a cemetery and start reading it. O yispalel, or, this surprised us, we'll have to come back to this, you can't go to the cemetery and start davening. You can't even say, forget, you didn't take the Chumash, you didn't take the You didn't take the Sefer Torah. You just, you want to say it to Tehillim by heart. No, no. There's no davening, no recitation of psukim in the cemetery. Ella im kein l'chmod hames. Okay, unless, we'll come back to this exception in a moment, unless it's for the purpose of honoring the deceased, the category of kavanah hames, you could say a pasuk. Last paragraph. Mutter likanas beis akvaros l'sof t'alam shel hames or shel kever lavush tzitzis. You can wear tzitzis, however, right, just continue to the line of Allah Ibna, She'ena Nulub Shinoza Lishem Mitzvah, Asra Filo Ena Nigrai, Bahani Milikisha Tzitzios Megulim, Aval Imem Chusim Mut. So if you're wearing a tzitzis out and they're visible, you're not allowed to do that in the cemetery. That's a violation of Loi Barosh. You're saying, oh, look, the mitzvah that I can perform, the people in the cemetery have left this world, they can't perform that mitzvah. So if you know someone who wears the tzitzis out, anytime they go to a cemetery, they tuck the tzitzis in. Okay, that's the halacha. You can't wear tzitzis visibly in a cemetery. Okay, so almost by definition, the time we're spending in a cemetery means that it's time that we're not devoting to Torah or to tefillah or to mitzvos. So right away, right, you should notice that this is someplace we're not running to be. And I'll add on top of that, and again, I'm not a Kabbalist, but we could look at least at a couple of the sources in the name of the Ari. In source 7, the Be'er Hetev quotes, V'kasa v'kisvei Arizal te'en lilech al kvaros, elu letzorach halavayas hames. Okay, you don't, and this is the Ari speaking, right? And the Kabbalists, we think, have some connections to the cemeteries, which we'll talk about later. But the Ari says off the bat, don't go to a cemetery unless you're going for a funeral. He's saying, don't go any other time. Right? Why? So I just translate this as you don't go to a cemetery because in a cemetery, evil spirits will attach to you. So I can't explain exactly what that means, but we all kind of get from a Kabbalistic perspective that there's something about cemeteries that we're meant to avoid. Okay, so there's a tension. On the one hand, there's something special about going to a cemetery, as we saw from Kalev and Rabimani. On the other, it seems like we're meant to keep cemeteries at a distance. How do we reconcile these conflicting sources? Okay, so let's begin with one important qualification, and I already alluded to it in the Shulchan Aruch when he said, it's for Kavod HaMeis, you could say a pasuk. So if you look at source number eight, the Gemara says when Chizkiyahu HaMelech died, the kavud asu lo b'moso. They did some kind of something for his kavod. Melamed shehoshivo yeshiva al kivro. What did they do? It's kind of a wild source. It says that they established the yeshiva at the grave of Chizkiyahu HaMelech. So this seems to be telling us something about learning and doing mitzvos at the cemetery, at the grave. What's that all about? So Tosa says, let me explain to you. Shoshivu yeshiva al kibro. So first of all, why were they allowed to do it? Lefisha, here by Torah b'Yisrael. So Chizkiyahu HaMelech, right, spread Torah to the Jewish people. And so it wasn't by accident that they decided that the way to honor Chizkiyahu was through a yeshiva where they'd be learning. As the Gemara says, right, top of the bottom of the country, they inspected the whole country from Dan to Beersheba. So in the time of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, they were so expert, men and women and children, didn't matter who, they all were like Bekiyim, Betum of Atara, in the jots and tittles of every nuance of halacha. So that was a credit to Chizkiyahu HaMelech, the law of Kibra Mamish. But now the Tosos say it wasn't like they put up the yeshiva in the cemetery. Ela birchuk arba amos delay galoi garush. So you still have to factor in this notion of loi garush. It can't be too nearby, but in some manner. For something that pertains to Kavod HaMeis, we make exceptions to the general rule. So if you look in the next couple sources, you'll see it again. Sources 10, 11, 12, we'll just do it quickly. In source 11, the Shulchan Aruch sort of backtracks or expands on what he had said before. You know, you weren't allowed. He said, you can't take a Torah, you can't say a pasuk, you can't daven. However, he said, for Kavod HaMeis, it's okay. Mutar lomar psukim v'drasha l'Kavod HaMeis. As long as it's for the honor of the deceased, that is okay. Okay, and the Taz picks up on it, and he says in source 12, l'Kavod HaMeis, d'chol she'ein l'Kavod HaMeis, v'adai asur. Okay, learning, davening, any of that stuff that's not for Kavod HaMeis, you're not allowed to do in the cemetery. V'adai asur. V'lo ki yesh mechavni maharos malasam, bidrush al hameis, masha'einu l'Kavod HaMeis. V'lav shapir. Okay, and now he just says something contemporary. Okay, this is the Taz in 16th century Poland. So he's reporting on what's happening kind of on the ground, which is to say, people are abusing this for something which is covered a mace. You could say a pasuk, you can quote a Tehillim at the cemetery, and somebody's giving a hesped. It's a shloshim, so somebody's talking about the niftar. In that context, that's okay. But he says people go to the cemetery and they start quoting all kinds of pieces of Torah. He says that's not appropriate. The carve out for saying a pasuk or for doing any learning at the cemetery is very limited, and it's limited exclusively to circumstances which will provide some kavod to the deceased. And anything beyond that exception is strictly prohibited. So, any questions or comments before I make a little transition? Yeah, go ahead, Andrew. Okay, so perfect. So that's a great segue into this next section, which is, what if you're not really, it's not Kavod HaMeis, okay? You're not going to the cemetery for the deceased. You're really going for you, like Kalev. Okay, so, right, he didn't show up at Chevron because Kavod HaMeis, he had something very specific that was on his mind that he wanted to daven for. Okay. So, or the source that we saw earlier, like going to a cemetery on a fast day. So that's not a Kavod HaMeis. You might be going to a cemetery where you don't even know the people who are buried there. So what about all the people who visit graves of tzaddikim in Europe? So I don't have a connection to this person. I'm going because I know someone who's a chola, they need a refuah shlema, and I go and daven at the kever of the tzaddik. That's not really a Kavod HaMeis. Yeah. So Hasidim, right, take this very, very seriously. They go and daven at the tzaddik's grave. So how do we understand this notion of davening in the sect? Okay, so that would kind of undo the whole category. Right, saying by definition, anytime you visit a grave, that's a Kavod HaMeis because you stopped by the cemetery. You make a trip to visit, right? That's Kavod HaMeis, and right, that would be kind of the biggest carve out you could possibly make. So anything would be subsumed. Virtually anything would be subsumed in that category. Okay, hold on to that. Thought. Okay, so let's jump in. Really, the most important, most seminal source that I want to share with you today is source number 13. This Gemara in Titus. Everyone have it? Source 13 on the sheet. Lama Yotzin Lebeis HaKarbs. Okay, so you can't really get any more explicit than that. The Gemara wants to know, why are you going to the cemetery? And the context for this question is the Gemara is telling us that part of the process of davening on the fast days, you go to the cemetery on the public fast. Okay? And public fast means there's a drought, there's no rain, there's danger to life and limb because you're not going to be able to survive if there's no rain. So they're going, they're trying to do everything they can to storm the gates of heaven and daven for rain. And one of the things that they do is they go to the cemetery. So why are you going to the cemetery? What are you doing at the cemetery? Pliki bar Rabbi Levi bar Chama v'Rabbi Chanina. So it's a debate. It's a debate between Rabbi Levi and Rabbi Chanina. So I don't think it's an ironclad rule. I think generally when the Gemara sets it up this way, we don't know who says what. It's a machlokas, and then you get the two sides. But we don't know which side corresponds to which side of the machlokas. I think generally it's the first is parallel to the first, and the second parallel to the second. If you know exceptions, let me know. In this case, we do know, as a source we'll see in a second, it correlates. Okay, so Rabbi Levi, and says Chadamar, one side of the debate, says the following. So the Gemara is not telling us which side, but we know it's Rabbi Levi. Chadamar, according to Rabbi Levi, Harei anu chashuvim lefanecha kemes. So this is new. Rabbi Levi says, we haven't seen this before. Rabbi Levi says, why do you go to the cemetery? So it has nothing to do with the people who are buried there. It has to do with the idea of death. It has to do with the idea of people being buried. We're saying when we go to the cemetery, we are like those who have already passed away. Our lives are nothing. We're so small. We're so humbled. We're so tiny. We have these fragile lives. They could end at any moment. Hashem, we're like Mason. Okay, we have formulations like this on Yamim Narayim. We consider ourselves to be Afar Bank. We're like the Mason. Chadamar, Rabbi Chanina says, no, that's not why we go to the cemetery on the fast day. We're not humbling ourselves. We go to the cemetery on the fast day. Wow. This is not like a Hasidic Shemaisa. This is an Amara in the Gemara saying, we go to the cemetery so that the deceased can daven on our behalf. My benign. Who cares? What's the difference? What's the practical application of this debate? So the Gemara Johnny on the spot says, what's the difference? You could be not, you could be nothing. I'll give you a perfect nafkamina. What if you only have near your community a non-Jewish cemetery? You go to the non-Jewish cemetery on the fast day. So according to the first opinion, yeah, sure, go. It doesn't matter who's buried there. A cemetery is a cemetery. The idea is to humble ourselves, remind us of our own mortality. And you could accomplish that irrespective of who's buried in the cemetery. It doesn't matter at all. According to Rabbi Chanina, according to the second opinion, if you're trying to get the people buried there to daven on your behalf, well, you're not going to go ask a bunch of Gentiles. No, it needs to be a Jewish cemetery. We wouldn't go unless there was a Jewish cemetery where we could ask the people buried there to daven on our behalf. Okay, so this is really a seminal source. There's two approaches, two streams of thought. Are we there to confront our own mortality, or are we trying to somehow engage the departed? And the Talmud Bavli, the Gemara itself, leaves the matter unsettled. So there's room to say it could be the first approach or it could be the second. The Yerushalmi is unequivocal. The Yerushalmi only has one of these two approaches. And who is it? Rabbi Levi, the first approach. Number 14, Amar Rabbi Levi, V'lama yotzin bein hakvaros, lomar chashavenu ki'ilu, Mesim lefanach. Hashem, you should consider us to be like we're already dead. So if you had to guess these two approaches, approach number one, we're going to the cemetery to humble ourselves, or approach number two, we're going there to ask something of the deceased. So what would you guess is the Rambam's approach to this question? Just knowing that the Rambam is a rationalist. You'd say approach number one, right? And you would be absolutely correct, right? Unsurprisingly, the Rambam says in source number 15, Sheva Tainiyos Ha'ilu Komakom Shigrosi Nosam Sham, anytime there's one of these public fast days, Achar Shivispalim, after you daven, you went to shul to daven. Yotin Kol Am Lebesek first, after davening, you go to the cemetery, Ubochin Umischaninim Sham. Come back to the word Mischaninim. But you go and you cry at the cemetery, kilomar, as if to say, Hare atem meisim ki'ilu im lo tashuvu midar kechem, right? You can imagine someone preaching to the people on the fast day, remember, you have to know that you're nothing and you're afar ve'efer, and if you don't daven, if you don't mend your ways, if you don't do tshuva, you're going to be in the center. And that's why we go to the center. Okay, it's graphic and it's stark. It's not to daven at the cemetery. It's just to have a confrontation with our own mortality. And maybe in the interest of time, I'll skip source number number 16 and just summarize for you what you already surely know, where the Rambam writes in his Shmona Brakim that when you daven, remember that you daven directly to Hashem. And there's no intermediaries, and there's no person, and there's no angel, and there's no ruach and neshama. That it's just you and Hashem. Okay, it's a direct channel, and there are no intermediaries in between. And you don't daven to the malachim, and you don't daven to people who have left this. So this all tells us, right, a support for the first position, which says the only reason you're going to the cemetery is to remind yourself of your own mortality. It's not to daven. All this being said, Gemara's second answer doesn't seem to be entirely rejected. The Gemara put on the books, right, this second answer in the name of Rabbi Chanina, that maybe you're going to the cemetery to ask something of the deceased. So I just want to show you a couple examples of people who believed that it was appropriate to daven at the cemetery. What they're davening and what they're davening for and how they're davening, we'll have to tease out. Okay, so just join me on a quick digression in source number 17. Reish Lakish hava mitzayin marta de rabbanan. Reish Lakish was a big tzaddik, and among the things that he used to do, besides the learning that we know about in the Gemara, is he would find the graves of tzaddikim, and he would mark them. Okay, a tziyun is a marker. So have a mitzayin ma'arta derabanan, and in prior generations, oftentimes Jewish graves were in a cave, right, as opposed to below ground. Ma'arta usually is a cave. So he'd go to these caves and he'd mark them, and he would put up a marker that said so and so is buried here. Why did he do that? Why they're unmarked in the first place is an open question. But why was he going around marking the graves? So Rashi says, I'll tell you why. Mitzayin marta derabanan shelo yikashlu kohanim lavur aleihem ulahayim. So shelo ta'are tekala al yedei tzaddikim. Public service. So most of the people in this room could go to a cemetery. That's permitted. But a kohen is not permitted to go to a cemetery. A kohen is only allowed to defile himself upon the passing of one of his seven immediate relatives. Other than those very, very specific occasions in the life of a kohen, he can't go to a funeral, he can't go to a cemetery, he can't come into contact with someone who has left this world. So Reish Lakish said, I'm going to do a public service so as to prevent kohanim from unwittingly defiling themselves by coming into contact with a corpse. I'm going to put up markers around graves of tzaddikim. And then there's kind of this beautiful formulation in Rashi, Shalot are takala al yadei tzaddikim. So why did he do this with all the graves? Maybe he did. But the focus is on the graves of tzaddikim. The defilement of a kohen shouldn't come about as the result of the presence of the corpse of a tzaddik. That's just a digression. Really, I bring this source to share with you source number 19, which is Rav Yaakov Emden. Yaakov Emden has a totally different interpretation of this Gemara, and he writes the following. Reish Lakish had a mitzayin ma'arta derabanan. Why was Reish Lakish going around marking the graves of tzaddikim near a benai, near a li? Ki hecha deliyadu inshe va'asu mitzluye al kivrayim. He wasn't marking the graves to protect unwitting kohanim. He was marking the graves so that people who wished daven at the graves of tzaddikim would know where to find them. So Rav Yaakov Emden is telling you that it's a good idea or at least it's permitted for people to daven at graves of tzaddikim. And the way that Rav Yaakov Engdon is reading this Gemara, he's telling you Reish Lakish was doing whatever he could to facilitate the easy access to graves of tzaddikim where people could daven. Let me share with you a source, I think it's a fascinating source, source number 20. We don't talk about it enough, but there's an important concept known as a tzava. Tzava is an ethical will. It's not a last will and testament where it says that I leave my svarim to my children. Last will and testament is about money and possessions. A tzava is what we would translate in English as an ethical will. Ethical will means I'm going to leave this world, and when I do, here's what I want my children and grandchildren to know and to think about and to remember. These are the things that I cared about. These are the things that I think are valuable. These are the lessons I want you to take with you. Very old practice of people writing a tzava and leaving an ethical will behind for the benefit of their children and grandchildren. And sometimes we have the ethical wills of prominent people in Jewish history. One of them that we have is the tzava of the Rush, of Rabbeinu Rush. Okay, so it's like an 800-year-old document. Just by the body, in the course of this ethical will, runs for several pages. He writes the following, source number 20, third line. V'zos tfilasi kol hayamim al kivri hatzadikim v'hatzadimim. He just says, by the way, I want to let you know, whenever I visited kivri tzadikim, this is the tfilo that I would say at the cemetery. Here's how it went. Ribon ha'olamim, melech yoshev al kisei rachamim. Galui v'yadu alavanecha, shekol chetzi, v'banim, lo b'shvil lahavti v'hem, v'lo b'shvil nizgav v'hem, rak l'kai mitzvah shem tzavisi, v'piri of Rivya Hashem, I want you to know that I had children, not for any kavod for myself, I did it because you commanded the mitzvah, piri of Rivya, I was trying to be a good Eved Hashem. Yihir atzon milfanecha. May it be your will, Hashem, shitzitkanenu be'etza tovam lufanecha b'chol inyanein. May my children be guided in the path of making the right decisions in your eyes. V'tia yirascha al panenu levilti nechta. And may all of us in our family have yiras Hashem all the time. V'nichye lufanecha b'yirasecha v'yeli zera shal kayama v'zera nashim shimale makam avosai, people who trod the paths of their parents and grandparents. May Hashem bless me with children who go in the righteous way. So it's beautiful. It's not for our purpose right now, just to sort of share with you that there's a very old custom, right, of going to Kivrei Tzadikim. He wasn't saying he went to his father's grave, just Kivrei Tzadikim, and davening. And davening, in his case, this is the tefillah that he said that he should have children and grandchildren who had yiras Hashem. So that's not going to the cemetery to humble yourself and remember your mortality. That's going to the cemetery to daven. And the Rama, this kind of spiritual heir of the Rush and the Tosafists, writes in source number 21. This is on Erev Rosh Hashanah. There's a lot of communities where they have a practice on Erev Rosh Hashanah to go to cemeteries and to daven and to give tzedakah. So, what are we saying about the dead? There's some ambiguity here. Are we davening next to them? This was Andrew's question. Are we davening to them? Are we asking something of them? How do we come to terms with what it would mean to daven for, right, or to daven to those who have left this world? And again, keeping in mind that there's a whole school of thought, the Rambam at the head of it, that says, that's not what you're doing at the cemetery. You're going to the cemetery, it's just to remind you of your own mortality. We're not davening we're not davening at the Sabbath. So among the early proponents of davening at the cemetery, not just davening at the cemetery, like the Rush said, I used to daven at the cemetery, but actually davening to, or we'll have to figure out the best formulation, but saying something to the deceased comes from the Sefer Hasidim. Okay, so what's the Sefer Hasidim? So the Sefer Hasidim is a reflection of the Hasidei Ashkenaz, the early Ashkenazic pietists. Again, this is long before, what we call Hasidus in the 18th and 19th century. We're talking about the medieval period in Ashkenaz, where there were pietists who were quite extreme in their pietistic and ascetic practices. Many of them are recorded in the Sefer Hasidim, but in many camps, the Sefer Hasidim became, I wouldn't say normative, but it was a source of information about past practices, some of which were then absorbed into normative practice. So Sefer Hasidim records the following: Barzilai Hagilati Amar Amos Beiri Kihaniya Yesh Remesim Sheohavehem Holchim Al Kivrehem Umevakshim Al Nishmasan Tova Umeitiv Lahem Beosa. There is some benefit, there is some enjoyment, there's some hana that accrues to the deceased when their loved ones go and visit their graves and daven for them. So this is an important and enigmatic source, but the Sefer Hasidim is saying that there's some kind of hana. You're doing something. You go and start davening at the grave of your parents and grandparents, it brings them some kind of joy. Begam kishemakshim mehem hem mispalalim al hachai. Again, a little enigmatic, but there's some kind of like a back and forth here. You have a goof and are in this world, and they are not in this world. So you're able to do something that they're not able to do. You can move your lips and say a tefillah in this world. If you do that for them, then they'll do something for you. Begam kishim avakshim ahem hem mispalalim al achayim. You daven for them, and they daven for you. Simple. Good. Okay, so this is not going necessarily to help us with the discussion of why we'd be visiting graves at Tzaddikim, but this might help us a little with the discussion of why we would be visiting graves of relatives. That's a fair distinction. The problem is, how can we justify asking the dead to intercede for us? Okay, that sounds like a bridge too far. Look in source number 23. The Maharam Mirupa talk about, we always talk about during the keynotes, quotes the following position of a man called Rabbeinu Chaim Paltiel. Hashem Yana Eshlom Ohavi Rav Eliakim Habiyadua kima'od ani nifla al b'nei adam hanadrim al beis akvaros itzas haya dome ledoresh el hamesim. Chaim Paltiel says, there's people I know. They take a neder. They take a vow that they're going to make a journey to a particular cemetery, and they're going to daven at the cemetery. And he says, I have a problem with this practice. I have a problem with this practice because it reminds me of, it resembles the biblical prohibition of Doresh El Hamesin. You're not allowed to ask something of the dead. Rakka Bekalav Shadi Shadeh Hakibri Abbas Hainush is falling La Hashem says, if you go back to the sources, right, and you have to do a little fancy work. He says, if you go back to the sources, it's not that Kalev davened to, not that Kalev davened to the Avos, rather, Hashem's following Hashem. He was davening to Hashem, Makom Kadosh Goreim Shitahet Vlaso Nishmas. Just happens to be, and this is new, you haven't seen this formulation, there's something about the place where particular people are buried that makes your tefillah more likely to be received, but no one is davening to the deceased. Okay, kida ashkechana gabe Abraham amakom sheremacham lavecham makom gorin is the place. Okay, inami adam shebisa asanes lichvodam mishateach akivra, where a person humbles themselves like this. Zematzim ach nashim ne adam sheinim yodimse lo yadati halichasam lama. But he says a lot of people don't know this. They're ignorant of what they're doing there. And they start going to cemeteries to pray to the deceased. He says, whenever I find such people, I tell them, if that's your vow, that you vow to go to the cemetery and daven to the deceased, I say you should annul your vow. Okay? He says, you were planning to spend $1,000 on the trip to get to Uman. Take the $1,000, skip the trip, and give the money to Tzedakah. That's the position of Chaim Paltiel, as quoted by the Maharam Miru. Now, the Chidah and others cite a position in the Zohar that helps us deal with this objection. Right. What are you going to do with Reb Chaim Paltiel's objection? It's a puzzle. You're not allowed to be Doresh El Hamesim. You can't inquire after the dead. You can't ask the dead to do something for us. So the Zohar has the solution. What's the Zohar solution? I have it for you in source number 24. In the interest of time, I'll just share it with you in source number 25, as quoted by the Chidah. The bold, he says, ki hatzadikim ikraim chayim, the lo kisharmesim shem afashim min hamitzvos, vazet enuach daitenu b'chol ha-chakiros hanizgar. Says, you have all these objections. How are you praying to the dead? How are you asking something of the dead? That's totally not okay. Zohar says, tzadikim in death are still considered alive. They're still considered alive. Then you have circumvented the entire prohibition. Again, coming back to simplest point, this is not going to help. I don't want to say anything about people's parents or grandparents. Maybe they're tzaddikim. But presuming that they're not in the category of tzaddikim, somebody in the world has to be considered dead. Presume. Tzaddikim are not dead even when they're dead. Other people might be dead when they're dead. But tzaddikim are called chayim even after they're gone, in which case, there's no objection to davening to them, to asking them to intercede on your behalf. Let's learn the Gesher HaChaim in source number 26, who spells this out for us. Jump down about seven lines. Middle of the line, Harim Mefurish, Bezor HaKodesh, Al Kibre, Tzadikim, Leikim, Shem Dorash HaLamesim. There's no prohibition of Dorash HaLamesim when it comes to Kibre Tzadikim. And daven that the deceased person should do something himself, that's not the idea. We have our tefillos, and we're davening to Hashem. But it's possible to request of the deceased that they intercede on our behalf to support our tefillos to Hashem. And that's what the Zohar means when the Zohar tells us that even in death, the tzaddik is considered to be alive. Sorry,
You see this all the time. You can go to a living tzaddik. There's no objection, right? Somebody says, put my name on the cholim list. What are you doing? He's saying, can you daven for me? Can you daven for my aunt? She's having a procedure. You ask other people to daven for you, and you can ask tzaddikim to daven for people who need a refuah shleima, who need a tefillah, whatever the case may be. So if the tzaddikim are considered to be living even after they're gone, so you're just in the same category of asking people to daven for you, and just happens to be tzaddikim are considered living even after they have left this world, and so it's no problem, and so it's no problem at all. Yeah, so Yair is articulating the position of the Rambam, and every rationalist and misnaged who follows the Rambam, right? We don't believe in intercessors, right? We don't believe in intercession at all. We have a direct line to Hashem, we daven to Hashem, and we wouldn't go to a tzaddik and ask them to daven for us, so we shouldn't go to the grave of a tzaddik and ask them to daven for us, and that is certainly an approach. And here I'm trying to articulate an alternative approach, which is also rooted in some very important sources, some of them Kabbalist. Okay, let me share with you Abe, go ahead. Yeah. So hold on to that thought. I want to come back to the nefesh and the neshama and the roles that they play. Okay. The next source I want to share with you is from the Prima Gadim, from Yosef Ta'amim. I happened to once be in Frankfurt under Oder. There's two Frankfurts in Germany. Maybe there's more, but the main Frankfurt that we know of when we hear the term Frankfurt is Frankfurt am Main, big city. And then there's Frankfurt under Oder, which no one's ever heard of. It's a tiny little city in eastern Germany. It used to be the home to a prominent Jewish community. There was a printing press there, and Rabbi Yosef Ta'amim lived there. So I was in Frankfurt under Oder, and there's nothing to do in Frankfurt under Oder. It just happens to be the Prima Gadim is buried there. It's actually on the other side. The Oder is the river that separates Germany from Poland. And on the other side, the Polish side of Frankfurt under Oder, is the grave of the Prima Gadim. So I went to visit the grave of the Prima Gadim. So I was happy to learn that he didn't seem to have, as we'll see in source number 27, he didn't seem to have any principled objections to visiting Kivri Tzadikim. It would have been upsetting to learn that I had visited his grave, knowing that that's not something he was in favor of. So source number 27, the Prima Gadim says, a besider mana lashon yesh tefilos masha omri malakvarim mash miktsash bavakshim eis hanefesh shiyalitz. Tov Ba'adein. He just happens to mention that there's a book called Manu Lashon. And in the book, Manu Lashon, are tzvilos that you're meant to say at the cemetery. And he says that you can see from some of those tzvilos that it's appropriate to request that the soul intercede on our behalf. So what's the book Manu Lashon? Manu Lashon has not been in print for a couple hundred years, but Manu Lashon is a fascinating book. Which was published for people who are going to the cemetery. And what do you say when you get to the cemetery? So you don't bring a sitter, you bring the Manu Lashon, and the Manu Lashon has like 100 different tefillos for every occasion that people could say when they visit the cemetery. And I've excerpted almost at random one of these sources for you, an excerpt from Manu Lashon. It's in Yiddish, the instructions are in Yiddish, and the tefillos are in Hebrew. So just look in source number 28. Look in the Yiddish for a second. Okay. Ben einer macht in simcha. Okay, so this is the tefillah for the occasion of someone who's making a simcha. Und farch sich für ein hara, will erchat grois hatzlacha, soll seinen die diese tefillah. So Somebody's making a simcha. Things are rolling. They're going his way. He's had lots of success. And he wants to stave off any potential ayin hara. This is the tefillah that he says. Fascinating. And there's one for like every occasion. So what's the tefillah? What do you say? Tzadikei yisodei olam v'amudav. Yishar se'el v'avadav. Yishalom enu chastem. The guy is standing at the grave and he starts talking in second person to the deceased. Vasi lispalo p'nei malaschem. I've come to daven next to you. Bikochacham shichadu ba'ati v'ham litzu. Will you intercede on my behalf? So this wasn't just a pie-in-the-sky academic conversation. There's a whole book which was published and republished numerous times, right, with tefillos for all occasions where people were going to the cemetery and not just to humble themselves at the cemetery and not just to daven in a place where tefillos will be more likely to be received, but actually to speak to and to request the intercession of those who have passed away. I'll just share with you in source number 29. This is quite an obscure source from the note of Yehuda, Rabbi Cheska Landau. Cheska Landau had a fascinating relationship to Kabbalah. Privately, he was a Kabbalist and practitioner of Kabbalah, but he, for lots of good reasons, was very hesitant to endorse the study of Kabbalah because it was being abused in all kinds of ways. But he just happens to mention, this is in Drusha, he just happens to mention, by the by, the following about the graves of tzaddikim. Just to put it in context, he says you should always be careful to give the proper eulogy for a tzaddik who's left this world. But if somebody blew it and they didn't give the right eulogy, so if they're a tzaddik, the saving grace is they could always go to the grave of the tzaddik and they could kind of make up for it in that context. He says, in the first instance, you shouldn't be remiss about the way that you eulogize an important person. Shouldn't rely on the fact that you could always visit his grave and daven there at a difficult time. He says, "Afal piken, nonetheless, ha'eder ha'tzadik shemes hu yoser hem seidel l'mekomos rechokim mi'achar she'ein lahem shuv hagana mistus hatzad. Gam ein lahem tanchumim li'ispalo akivro mi'achar shem rechokim mi'makom shenik barba." He says, when a tzadik passes away, it's a bigger tragedy for people who live far away from the burial place of that tzaddik. Because the people who live close by at least have the opportunity to visit the grave on a regular basis because it's local. For Rabbi Cheska Landau, this was the difference between tzaddikim who are living and tzaddikim who are deceased. The former daven for the entire generation without being asked. The latter only daven on request. And it seems that they're kind of only able to help people who visit and daven for their help. Okay, Simcha? Okay, so what is the effect of this of someone being a Melitz Yosher if they're not inside? Okay, so that's actually a perfect segue. Let's jump into source 31. In the interest of time, I'm going to skip source 30, also kind of a far-out source from the Minchas Lazar, the Munkacher Rebbe, who says it's actually a mitzvah. It's actually a mitzvah. It's not just that you have permission. It's not just a reshus that you can, but this is actually a mitzvah to daven at Kivriyam. So let's go back to the Gesher Chaim source number 31. And he kind of puts this all together for us and helps us organize the principle that we've been talking about and talking around. Source number 31. He says, "Vihine." Let's just get this straight. Elu hashotim Hatzoakim l'meisim b'dorshim tshuameh. Says if somebody goes and they daven to the deceased, okay, levad ma'asher ovrim al b'dorash al meisim, forgetting about the fact that they have violated an explicit biblical commandment, okay, that's an explicit prohibition. Ovrim gam alav lo yelech lecha Elohim acherim al panan. He says, I would tell you, right, that it's not just Dorash Alamesim, they violate one of the Ten Commandments. If you believe that a dead person is going to answer your tefillos, that's idolatry. Okay, don't do that. That's a terrible mistake. The whole debate about whether and to what extent we should be davening at a cemetery is the following. The only debate is whether or not you take the rationalist Rambam approach that says you don't go to cemeteries to ask anyone to be an intercessor, or you take the more Kabbalistic approach of davening to the person, not that they should answer your tefillos, but rather that they should assist you. They should help intercede on your behalf. It's like when you add the name to the cholim list, you're not telling someone, daven for me and I won't daven. No, we'll all daven together. I'll daven and you'll daven. And we don't exactly know how these things work. And hopefully the combination of your davening and my davening will make it more likely that our tefillos are heard. So that's okay. I'm davening. And I'm also asking someone who's passed on from this world to help my tefillos get to the right place. Okay. Whether or right, as the Rambam would say, or maybe that's prohibited as well. Right. So we haven't seen this, but the Geshur Chaim very subtly says, if you're really interested in this, if you're you follow the Rambam, but you really want more help, so you could daven to Hashem and ask Hashem that people who have passed on should help your tefillos be answered. So there's a way to thread that needle if you're in Yair's camp and you want to avoid the whole issue, but you want to somehow get extra help. So everything goes to Hashem, just asking Hashem, right, for the people who have passed on to intercede on your behalf. So now this is back to Simcha's question. What happens? What's the mechanism by which going to the cemetery and davening, right, that someone should intercede on your river? How does that work? So now we actually get the nuts and bolts. Again, forgive me because not a Kabbalist. But on some level, there's something called the nefesh. And the nefesh of the deceased hovers above the grave of the departed. And it's a presence. It's there, it's at the grave, it's at the cemetery. And I would even tell you, I've heard from people who have said they have felt this. They know this. It's not a dream. This is something that people have experienced. What happens? The nefesh hameis hachofefes mi'alakim v'hanefesh modiyah l'ruach. So there's different levels, and we could think about them in kind of three-dimensional terms, with us being down here and heaven being up there. So the nefesh communicates with the ruach, which is on a higher level. The haruach modiyah l'neshama. The ruach communicates to the neshama, which is on the next level. And the tefillos are taken from this world to the next. So this is the basis, right? This is really the best kind of summation of the school of thought that we've seen that says you really can accomplish something by davening at the kever of someone who's passed on and having them intercede on your behalf. And just to share one off-the-wall source, there's many. Rabbi Chanan Reiner, who's really at the top of the academic field of early modern Jewry in Israel, in his doctoral dissertation, source number 32, just mentioned in a footnote the following. His doctoral dissertation was called Aliyah v'Aliyah L'Regel Eretz Yisrael, Aliyah and pilgrimages to Israel. This is the end of the first line. Nira kimakom ha'aliyah l'regel ha'ikar le'yuti Ashkenaz ha'yakivros mishpachas Rabbi Yehuda Chassin Regensburg. Okay, so just historically, we talked about the Sefer Chassidim. There were lots of Jews visiting graves of tzaddikim. Rabbi Yehuda Chassin was one of the principal graves that they visited, or members of his family. And now, ready for this one, he says, Kach l'dugma, for example, I found, Nisefer Rabbi Nachum Ollendorf, Shebet Tishabav, Reish Lamebeis, Ha'isi Ani Al Kivro, V'chassam Tishmi Al Matzei Vasa. Okay, 1472, this man on Tishabav visited the grave of Rabbi Yehuda Chassid, and what did he do when he was there? Inscribed his name on the Matzeva of Rabbi Yehuda Chassid. So again, it's not just davening. There's all kinds of practices that attach to visitation of graves of tzaddikim. But I'm just opening the door to give you an impression of what some of these practices were, because we obviously don't have time to look at all. Let me return for a second to the objectors. Okay, back to the Rambam camp. We've made a pretty good case for how it is that one might go to a cemetery, daven at a cemetery, even ask the intercession of someone buried in the cemetery. Now, the objectors say there shouldn't be any intercessors, and they point to the pasuk source number 33, which we already saw referenced by Reb Chaim Paltiel, as quoted by the Maharam. All these incantations and voodoo and practice. Dara Shalamesim is a pasuk. What does that mean? Dara Shalamesim 34. Zeha Mariv Atzmo Volech Delan Bevesa Kvaros Kadesh Tishra Alav Ruach Tuma. You sleep or you spend time in the cemetery so that you can somehow absorb some kind of the ruach there. Or as the Torah Tzimimah says in source number 35, Ruach Tuma Shemachavin Shiavo Meis Bachalom Viyadu Mashashalala. Okay, so that you go to the cemetery with the express purpose of asking the deceased to appear to you in a dream to guide your decision making. You can see the Bach talks about why people might object to going to the cemetery, and one of the starkest sources is number 37. Reb Chaim Danziger, the Chai Adam, writes in source number 37, don't go down this path. Don't go to the cemetery to daven. It's too close. It's too close to this prohibition of being Dorash al-Mesim. If you need a daven at the cemetery, the tefillah is, you daven to Hashem. Okay? In the merit of these tzaddikim, right, and that's the mile of going to the cemetery, you can kind of point to the tzaddikim and say, in the merit, look, these are my parents, these are my grandparents, these were the tzaddikim of the generation, don't answer my tefillos because of me, answer my tefillos because of them, but again, not because we're asking them to intercede on their behalf. The Mishnah Berurah, I think, has become kind of the classic source on this, in source number 38, it says, why are you going to Beis HaKvaros? It says, not because we're asking anyone to do something for us, anyone who's left this world. Beis HaKvaros, umakom renuchas ha-tzadikim. Tzadikim are buried there, about tefillin yiskablish on Yoser, right? And there's a better chance that our tefillos will be received. Ach, al yasim magmaso neged ha-mesim. Ach, yivakesh meshem yisparach shi'itzen alav rachamim bischus ha-tzadikim shekanfei shofnei afar v'yakif ha-kvaros. Like the Chaya Adam, in the merit of the people buried there, our tefillos should be answered. And let me just take a quick digression, because I want to share a drop of Jewish history with you. It comes from a fascinating history of grave visitation among Christians and Muslims. So again, just to digress for a second to put it in historical context, this is from a scholar, Avriel Bar Levav, a contemporary scholar in Israel. He wrote the following. He said, explaining why so many of the Misnagdim and Chayadam in this camp, they were so intent on opposing this practice, which again seems to have some pretty good basis in the sources. The trend toward marginalizing 39, the trend toward marginalizing the cemetery should be viewed against the background of the marginality of death in Jewish culture in general, especially as compared to Christianity, in which the resurrection of Jesus after his death is central dogma from an early Christian period. The cult of saints and the veneration of their graves was a widespread phenomenon. It may well be that the Jewish objection to the veneration of graves can be grasped as a reaction to such Christian context. And it was true not just in the Christian context, but in Muslim contexts as well. And I just want to share with you a little borrowing that happened. So this is from the shoot of the Ma'ariv Bei Rav, who's famous from the Smicha controversy in Tzfat. The Ma'ariv Bei Rav was a Spanish exile, and before he got to Tzfat, he was wandering around North Africa and the Ottoman Empire. And he wrote about, and again, we don't have to get into this at all, I just want to show you one word. He says, She'ela, ani ha'isi ba mi beisi shehi ba andrinopola. Labadi lezayara li Rishalayim. So, anyone know what that word means? He says, "I was in my home in Andrianople in the Ottoman Empire, and I was lezayara li Rishalayim." What's ziyara? What language is that even? It's an Arabic word. Ziyara is an Arabic word, and it means pilgrimage. And the Muslims used to go on a pilgrimage on their holidays. And they go to visit certain graves of people that were important to them in their religion. So I'm just showing you that among Sephardim, there's 100 examples of this, they actually appropriated the word, right? And when they talked about going to Yerushalayim to visit Kivrei Avos, they used the word ziyara. Okay, so it's not like pie in the sky to think that there was some borrowing or some common practices among Jews and Muslims living one another in Muslim countries. This isn't to say that we appropriated the idea from somewhere else. We have a long history of visiting graves. But once it became common among Gentiles, right? So I'm just pointing this out to share that it's understandable why there could have been some resistance to it. I'll just say in parentheses, maybe we're even, where does the word Hajj come from? Chag. Okay, so they got Chag from us, and we got Ziyara from them. So end brackets, just to share that piece of Jewish history that for historical purposes and maybe sociological purposes, it could be that some of the opposition to grave visitation emerged from an opposition to the veneration of saints, which was prevalent both among Christians and Muslims. So we've come full circle. I want to begin to wrap up because it's 11 o'clock. There are really two different schools of thought. On the furthest extreme are the Hasidei Ashkenaz and the Hasidim. They're not just going to the cemetery to pray. They're actually asking something of the deceased. After all, tzaddikim are never really considered dead, so they can act on our behalf. And then unsurprisingly, among the rationalists and Misnagdim, there was a grave backlash, and we saw a number of points on the spectrum in between. So you can see in source number 41, in the interest of time, I'll just summarize. But when it comes to Avelus, we're always trying to strike some healthy balance where we're doing what's appropriate, but not going overboard. And really, it's that approach which should guide us when it comes to the visitation of graves of tzaddikim or the graves of relatives. I just want to conclude with maybe two final sources, one because it's Tisha B'Av, and this comes from the famous Tisha B'Av Gemaras that many people study on this day. In source number 42, the Gemara tells us about Titus. right, at the very end of his life. Ki havu kamayis amar lahu likliyuha lahu gavra uvadaru nekitme ashiv yami delo lashkeche elaha diyudai velok mevedina. When Titus was dying, he said to the people around him, he said, I want to be cremated. You should burn me and you should scatter my ashes in the sea so that the God of the Jews won't be able to find me. So it's just a fascinating Gemara for a lot of reasons, but it seems that this is one of those sources that supports the notion connecting a person's soul to the place that they're buried. If I'm not buried, I can't be found. Mashain came, if I am buried, and Titus is a case, right? So he's a Rasha, so there's going to be a judgment that's visited upon him. But for tzaddikim, for kivrei avos, right, the fact that the soul would be present in the place where the person is buried, forgives me, but I'll say, comes to light in this. So I just want to conclude with one final story. It's a kind of mashal, which is cited by the scholar Avriel Bar-Levav, and I have it for you in source number 43. The story about a rabbi whose community refused to hand over the sums necessary to erect a fence around the local cemetery. One Sabbath, he told them about his trip back home from the neighboring town while returning from a wedding. It was a dark and stormy winter night, and the horses lost their way in the mud. Unknowingly, they entered the cemetery and trotted over the graves. Suddenly, they went over the grave of the late official, who, when alive, had tried in vain to raise funds to erect a fence around the cemetery. Upset by having a horse and carriage drive over his grave, official tried to strangle the poor rabbi in revenge. The rabbi cried for mercy, but to no avail. Only when he promised that he would do his best to have a fence erected around the cemetery did the late official let him go. He then rode over the grave of Rabbi Zonville, who had strongly opposed such a fence. Now it was Zonville who forcibly strangled our poor rabbi almost to death and agreed to cease only when the rabbi promised him that no fence would be erected, that the graveyard would remain as it was. Next, he rode over the grave of the late Rabbi Beryl, known for his extreme honesty. He too started to strangle the rabbi, claiming that he'd heard him promising both to build a fence and to not build a fence. Surely the rabbi was lying and had to be punished. Don't worry, the rabbi told him. I did not deceive either. I will do my best to erect the fence. I'm sure the heads of the community will not allot the money. Nothing will happen. And I share this story because it so beautifully captures all this ambivalence. We want to be with the people that we've lost. We also need to keep them separate. We don't belong in the world of the dead. We occupy the world of the living. So we have a fence. And that's actually the halacha. Cemetery should have a fence. On one level, it's utilitarian, but on another level, it's deeply symbolic. A fence is not an impenetrable barrier. It separates two worlds, but it's not a hermetic scene. There's a time and a place for visiting the cemetery, and there's a very strong tradition that the soul or something metaphysical is present or more present where a person is buried. The opposition seems to have come from A, the risk of abuse, right, that this really might be Doresh al Hamis. B, a fear that we're venerating the saints and treating cemeteries like the Gentiles did. And maybe also historically, the opposition to Kabbalah or Kabbalistic practices. But if we tread carefully, there can be something elevating about the visit to the cemetery for all the reasons we've discussed. Confrontation with mortality that's humbling and compels us to search for meaning. An opportunity to connect and reconnect with people who meant a great deal to us. A chance to honor those who have passed on as a form of kavod hames, and the possibility that our tfilos might be better received in such a place, either with or without the intercession of the deceased. It's a powerful reminder that we're meant to put ourselves in a position to have our tfilos heard. Some people, the best way to do that might be to go to the Beis Olam, to go to the cemetery. For other people, the best place to do that might be the Beis Medrash or the Beis Knesset. And of course, we should all be open to the possibility that the emphasis could change based on where we are in life and where other people might be in death. Rav Soloveitchik was fond of saying we should never lose sight of Tisha B'Av's dual aspect. It's a day of suffering and sorrow, but as we said at the beginning, it's also a day of fasting and prayer. We have so much to daven for, and if today our prayers are more likely to be heard or to be received, all the more reason we should seize the opportunity. Continue in just a moment with Kiddush. Like the Rambam, saying, unsurprising. Keep it on for Kinos. Yeah, maybe we'll, I don't know where to put it exactly. Yeah, you could stop the recording, but a couple people here.